Peter, James, and John knew how to fish. I mean, really, they knew how to fish. They knew where the fish could be found, if they could be found. They knew when, and they knew how. Stay close to the shore, because the fish gather around the springs and streams where the water is fresh. Don't go out into the deep, for there are very few fish there. Fish at twilight and through the night, not during the day. Come to the shore in the morning, prepare your catch for the market, wash and mend your nets, and get some sleep. Don't trust your livelihood or luck to inexperience. And even then, know that it won't always go your way. So on the night we read about today, they had a bit of a fishing downturn. All night, no catch. We run into them washing their nets in the morning, maybe worried about how it all might change tomorrow or not. This was hardly the time for someone to come along and distract them from the business at hand. But something unusual was going on. Crowds were gathering and folks were talking down the beach about this preacher named Jesus. I'm thinking that maybe Simon looked over and saw a figure who was kind of being pressed against the beach closer and closer to the water by the crowds, but it wasn't his problem. But Jesus walked away from the crowd and down the beach and right on to Simon's boat and made it Simon's problem. He asked Simon to take the boat a few feet off of the shore so he, Jesus, could speak to the crowds. The water will carry his voice better, and no one will press on him if he's on the boat. So Jesus finishes his teaching. The crowd disperses. How about trying fishing again? Let me go out with you, out into the deep water, and let your nets down there. Now remember, you are the expert. You know where the markets are going, or not. At least you think you do. You know when it is best to cast your nets, and when it is best to wait it out. You know. He doesn't. Well, you know, we don't want to be unfriendly, Rabbi, but there is nothing out there, and this is the wrong time to fish. Silence. Okay. And you heard what happened. Simon was unnerved. Too much. Too dramatic. On top of what Jesus was teaching, the catch of fish just went way too close to his soul and forced him to rethink way too much. Miracles can do that, you know. They can humble us. It was the same with James and John. And Jesus said to them, "There is nothing to fear. This can be your new normal, if you let it. From now on, you can be my crew, experts in a new kind of fishing." So they left the big fish for others to take, and they followed him. When I read that story in 2009, it was my first stewardship sermon with you. Think back then, if you were here, about the church. On that morning, Fran Park and Kristen Ouellette were with me in the chancel, and we had one vacancy on our pastoral staff. We have seen staff and we have seen members come and go during that time, and we have tended to each other's lives, and we have disagreed with each other, and we have learned from each other. We have understood and we have misunderstood. We have found our way. We have welcomed new people into our fellowship and into leadership. We have done new things in mission and education and so much more. And we have worshiped. Every week, we have worshiped. Now, just before I arrived that year, you all had completed a 2006 capital campaign, and you closed your building fund. You incorporated into your regular annual operating budget a nearly $250,000 annual payment on the loan that we were still carrying on this beautiful sanctuary. You also had a spending freeze on because of a downturn in giving. Remember, it was 2009, and many were in personal financial distress from the forces of the recession. Money was being saved from being short-staffed, but that wasn't enough. I sent an appeal to the congregation that fall for help. You responded sacrificially to that appeal, and enough came in to both meet our expenses for the year and our obligation on the loan. It was an encouraging way to begin a ministry. You responded again in 2010 by giving above your pledging, and we funded our ministry that year too. And we began to make plans to go out into the deep, to do what God has been calling us to do, to open the doors, to both maintain our ministry as folks come and go, and to enter a season of growth if God so wills. And so 2011, as you remember that time if you were here, 2011 was in many ways shaped by Fran Park's illness and then his death that fall, and by an ongoing pastoral search, and by our ongoing ministries. For reasons that weren't really clear, we entered the fall of that year well behind in our giving. But after some conversations and words from the chancel step and prayer and faith, we saw an enormous outpouring of support and love and prayer at the end of the year, and we entered 2012, in fact, in a better position financially than the church had been in several years. By that time, though, it was clear to me, and I believe to our leadership as well, that our continuing debt during this time was inhibiting our imagination and preoccupying our attention. And so against all conventional wisdom that says debt reduction is the hardest kind of campaign to ever accomplish, you know, the kind of conventional wisdom that says you should stay on the shore and not go out into the deep and not fish during the day, your session committed to calling the congregation to do a couple of things alongside regular giving: to pledge to eliminate our debt and its interest payments over the course of 3 years, and to provide seed money to make good on a long-delayed promise to young families in the congregation for a working kitchen in Fellowship Hall, and to expand our parking lot to a level appropriate for a sanctuary of our size. Under the leadership of a remarkable committee and the generosity of so many, including a small group of givers especially committed to that campaign, we received those pledges, and we turned our faces toward the future. What a blessing that was, and still is. And what a confirmation of God at work among us. Now we are in the second year of receiving those pledges. The debt is much less than half of what it was, and it will be even lower by the end of this year. And we look forward to watching it approach zero as folks complete their pledges. And we also look forward to additional gifts, perhaps from some of you who weren't able to participate earlier on or weren't even members then, to keep us moving forward toward completing those projects of the kitchen and the parking, especially since we have run into some plumbing issues we didn't know about. But plumbing was another sermon. And again, this has all been a great gift of faith, which brings us closer to now. We saw here what sometimes happens in churches after a capital campaign, with regular giving dipping in the first year after a campaign. We have been hoping that it would all go up in the second year, but we haven't seen that quite yet, and we're in that second year. Yet committed to the strength of this ministry, we have finally filled our pastoral staff and made other progress. Administrative and maintenance needs have been tended to. Deferred repairs have been tackled, in part with some help from our foundation. And we have continued to trim costs where we can. And with this, we are now seeing what it actually costs year by year to maintain and advance our mission. And so I am naming the challenge again to you in the same way that I named the challenge 5 years ago. The successful campaign was not a reason to relax in stewardship. It was an occasion to call each one of us, each to the other, to recommit to deep support for our day-to-day ministry here. I need to ask you to do that if you feel called. We find ourselves this year in a similar position to where we were in 2011, when that beautiful outpouring of support closed a large gap and took us into the new year in a healthy and faithful position. We also need to ask for a real and measurable increase in pledges for 2015 so that we can continue in our mission and ministry and meet our obligations without cutting back. And so here we are. It's been a remarkable and remarkably faith-filled few years since that story of Jesus and Simon and fishing was last read in our worship. Even if you've only been a part of Pinnacle for 5 weeks and not 5 years, I still want you to hear this story, for I believe it is a story of God holding us and providing for us and sending us out into the deep in the light of day against conventional wisdom that would tell us to stay back closer to shore, committed to our mission here and throughout the world. And so here I am, in the same place where I stood 5 years ago, naming the challenge, but shaping the challenge with stories of new faithfulness and new opportunities. That's stewardship. If we're not stretching, we're not the church. That's stewardship. It's mending the nets and hearing God's call and going out. It's risking those same nets for more catch. It's recognizing what we're called to do, to let go, to grab on, and to follow. The deep that we are called to is not the safe part of the sea. Yet when Jesus calls us there, it is full and plentiful. And I believe that Jesus is calling us there. In fact, I believe we're already there. We are a deep, not a shallow congregation. We have a deep, not a shallow ministry, much deeper and fuller than most congregations of our size. We have dreams befitting a deep, not a shallow future. And we have deep faith and deep confidence in each other, and deep trust. We have what we need right here, in the Lord we serve, in what he is giving us. These are the gifts that God gives to us, and we're called to steward them well. So we are a loving and faithful community of mutual support, grateful to God for the opportunity to build something good here and to sustain it into the future. And so we all do our part, whatever it might be in a given moment. Even if in this moment, for a few of you, your part is to receive the grace and love of the church, to receive the gifts that others give until you are strong enough to give again yourself. That is why we are here, and that is our mission too. So this all leads to an undebatable conclusion about Christian stewardship, I believe. Whether we're talking about money or about anything we give in our lives, wherever we give it, as stewards of God's good gifts, we give not to get more, but to make more possible. We give not to get honor, but to give honor. And we give not to receive thanks, but to give thanks. And so my story, if I may, to finish. I'm remembering back in the 1960s, when the little church I spent my childhood in decided that it was time to buy new pews to replace the rickety old ones that had been given to them by another church. I remember the thermometer in the narthex counting the numbers of families and individuals who had made a pledge to buy a pew. I think they were about $150 apiece. That doesn't sound like much now, does it? But in those times, in that neighborhood, it was not a little sum. It was real money for families like mine. I remember one night walking by the kitchen and seeing my parents sitting at the kitchen table with a pad of paper in front of them and a pencil and their checkbook open, scribbling some figures and talking about whether they could buy a pew for this ministry that they had made a promise to. They decided that they would, even though I'm not sure they really could. I remember the pleasure on their faces and a sense that they had themselves received a gift in their power to give. I don't think I've had any better lesson in my life about stewardship. I wondered why they were so happy to give their money away. But I learned. I have no fear in asking you to give, and to give more if you can. I have no fear in asking you to pray and to pray more. I have no fear in asking you to love and to love more, because I want for you that kind of joy and that kind of freedom. Maybe that's why your compatriot suggested I tell this story again. And so to folks who are here for the first time or have only been a few times, I do hope that you see in this congregation a community of real faith, ready to follow into the deep and ready to welcome you on that journey. We're glad you're here. And so to our members and friends, it might feel to you this morning like it's a morning without fish for some of you. It might seem foolish to go back out into the water against all odds just because Jesus has told you to. And yet he still calls us to. And I hope you'll apply that to all areas of your life and not just the church. He calls us out to set down our nets again, for the fish are his. He knows where they are, and he will provide what we need to follow him if we will. So if you would, I invite you to sit at your own kitchen table this week. to read the material that we have sent you in the mail, to pray again for your own sense of mission in all of your life, and for the joy of giving. Come next week if you're ready. Place your estimate of giving in the basket at the end of our service when we give you an opportunity, or in the plates up in the terrace. And if you are not ready, come. Pray with us. Bring forward a commitment to prayer, to share your talents, and you will be ready to commit in other ways when the time comes. Come on board the boat, and we will set out together, once again, to the deep waters where Jesus has called us for his sake. Amen.